Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You want again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know what you've done.
Well, good evening and welcome to the Stop Child Abuse Now Talk Radio Show, sponsored by NASCA, which stands for the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Penelope Bennis. I'm from Bellevue, Washington. And I am waiting for my co-host, Pamela, but I do see that we have the president and founder of NASCA, who's called into the show, Bill Murray. So I wish to welcome Bill. Tonight is Monday, February 1st, 2021. It is February, which is hard to believe. Tonight, our show is a special guest night. Our special guest tonight is Timothy Faulks from Somerset, Kentucky. And I'll tell you a little bit more about Timothy from the bio that he generously provided us with in a few minutes. But first, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about NASCA and what NASCA is. And if you're not already aware, NASCA is all about child abuse trauma prevention, intervention, and recovery. We have a single purpose at NASCA, to address issues related to childhood abuse and trauma, including sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas and neglect, and we do so with only two goals. The first, especially, is related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. The second goal, offering hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, and information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. If you are streaming in and you are vacillating between whether you should call in or not to the show, I would highly recommend that you call into the show. One of my co-hosts will greet you and ask if you wish to participate and be on the panel or just listen in, and we will take care of you. So I would encourage you to call in, even if it's your first time. The number to call in is 646-595-2118. Again, that number is area code 646-595-2118, and Pamela, who's on my host, G, my co-host this evening, will welcome you into the show. Before I tell you a little bit more about our very special guest tonight, Timothy Faulks, I'd like to talk to you about how the show works on special guest night. We break up the show into multiple segments, and I will start with giving you a little bit of information about Timothy from his bio, and we then will invite Timothy to come on, and we start chronologically through the life of our special guest. And so Timothy will have an opportunity to talk to us about his story in the earlier years, and then we will break to the panel, and then we'll move on to his middle years. We'll break to the panel again, and then we'll move on to what he's doing today. So we usually try and have the panel have an opportunity to ask Timothy questions, our special guest questions, three times. I know that most of us calling in or listening in have our own stories, and we are all here because we share a common purpose. But because of the special guest night, I would ask, if you do wish to interact with our special guest, please keep your questions or comments around him, since this is his night and this is his show. So now that I've outlined how the evening will go, I'm really privileged to introduce our special guest, Timothy Phelps. He is from Somerset, Kentucky. He is a survivor of violence and neglect. In elementary school, Timothy remembers coming home one day and seeing hate and pure darkness radiating from his mother's eyes. He would spend much time with his nose in a corner, with his hands held high. If he became tired and allowed his arms to lower, he would receive a blow from whatever his mother could get her hands on, or simply have his head slammed into the wall. This abuse caused many self-doubts, anxieties, fears, and a strong desire to die. There's more to Timothy's bio, but I'm going to leave my introduction to Timothy and his bio there. And I can see, Timothy, that your mic is open. And I, Pamela, Bill, Nafka, and myself wish to thank you for coming on the show tonight, and I'm just going to turn the mic over to you, Timothy.
I appreciate it. It's an honor to be on the show and just to be able to tell my story a little bit. So, you know, growing up, as a young child, you know, I remember just, like I said, coming home that one day. It wasn't always this way. I just remember one day coming home and just seeing something different in my mother's eyes. You know, you can tell a lot by looking at someone's eyes, and I just seen something totally different. And just, there was that hate and that anger. And growing up, my mom was on so much medication that I truly believe still yet to this day that the reason for her change was due to the medication and how they counteracted with one another, because she was on so much nerve medication and just, I mean, she's dealt with a lot of stuff in her life. So, you know, she's got a lot of health issues, and I just believe that everything that they gave her counteracted and made her go crazy ultimately. But me and my sister, you know, we were the only two kids. I was the youngest of the two, and we would come home and we wouldn't have to do anything wrong, but we was forced to stand in the corner. We had to have our hands held up high. And, you know, we never knew why. That was the craziest thing about it. We never knew why. We didn't fully understand. And still yet to this day, you know, we don't understand what happened. You know, like I said, I believe it was because of the medication counteracting, but who knows? And really it doesn't matter at this point, but you know, I remember just not only the abuse at the home, but also even at school. You know, people don't know what people are going through in their life. And I urge people always to show random acts of love and kindness, because you never know what someone's going through. And being at home and having to deal with, you know, the physical abuse, being hit in the head or just slammed into the wall or thrown into a TV or whatever, you know, my mom could get her hands on, that, like I said, and just going to school and having kids just be so ugly to you because, you know, you're different. You know, growing up, I had speech problems. I struggled to say my R's correctly, you know, like, so whenever I tried to say girl, it would come out ghoul. Or whenever I try to say turkey, it would come out twerky. And people would make fun of that, and they would make fun of the fact that I had long hair, but they didn't realize that the reason I had long hair was because of the fact that my parents wouldn't take me to get it cut. And if they did, at this point, if they did want to get my hair cut, my mom wanted to do it herself, and then I don't know how many times she cut half of my ear off. So I you know, well, I won't say half of my ear, but like she would nip it and cut a piece off. And like, so of course I didn't want that. I would scream bloody murder. But just growing up and having to deal with that, and it wasn't even the kids. Sometimes it was even a teacher. I had a teacher that would, at a young age in the third grade, would sit here and if I didn't know an answer to a question or I didn't know what the question was because I was too busy getting, you know, trying to keep myself from being picked on, and the teacher would come up and just like start shaking me, grab me by the arm and shake me as hard as she could and say she's going to throw me to the moon. And of course, the kids just laughed and they loved it and everything. So it seemed like that was something that she ate up. So she did it even more.
Unbelievable. Do you mind if I ask?
And it wasn't. Yes.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
How old were you when your mother's, you know, abuse began? Can you remember what age you were?
Well, I was in like the second grade when I first remember it.
Okay.
So I was very young, and it wasn't even abuse. Even like there was also neglect that we had to deal with. You know, there were months on end where we would end up being put on what she called bread and water diets. We'd be given one slice of bread a day and one glass of water. And then my dad also worked at a restaurant, and he would bring home potatoes from the restaurant. And, you know, occasionally we'd be given those potatoes. But it was one of these things that even if the potatoes had been in the fridge for a while and they started to rot and everything, we'd be given those rotten potatoes and was acting like it was a treat. You know, we should be happy to have that. And that's, I mean, it's even today, just thinking about looking at this rotten potato in front of me and like you cut into it and it looked like just a brown tic-tac-toe board or something, like there's just big open areas and it's just, it was nasty.
And you mentioned you had an older sister as well. And so was she, it sounds like, I think you inferred, was she also the recipient of this type of abuse?
Yes, she was. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she was. There were times where, you know, she probably had it worse, in all honesty. And because she was the older child and everything. And, of course, she remembers more of it, too, of course, because of being older. But there were so many different things, like, and it wasn't even the physical abuse. You know, the physical abuse definitely hurt, and it's traumatizing. But I think even more than that, it was the verbal and the mental abuse that probably affected me the worst. You know, being told that you're stupid and you're worthless and you're ugly and you're a mistake and you should have never been born. And I mean, that messes with your mind majorly, and it causes a lot of issues, you know, in the future. And there are so many times in my life, like you said during the bio, you know, that I wanted to die. And there were so many times in my life that I tried to commit suicide. And the first time I tried to commit suicide was actually in the third grade. And I had gotten off the bus, and I was determined that night I was going to kill myself. And I waited, you know. So basically, as soon as I got home, I had to stand in the corner. And I stood there from the time I got home until the time my mom finally decided she was going to go to bed. And when she went to bed, then she would release us to go to bed ourselves. And, man, just getting released from the corner, because, I mean, you know, it takes a toll on you being standing there all day and everything. And it just felt so cool. Just, you know, the bed always felt so cool and just felt different than it does nowadays, you know. And I remember this time in third grade whenever I had planned I was going to kill myself. And I waited until my dad finally went to bed and gave it a little bit of time after and just waited, just, you know, till everybody should have been asleep. And I snuck out to the kitchen, and I still remember it, man. I walked from my bedroom, and I walked into the kitchen, which was right outside my door of my bedroom. And I walked past the refrigerator, which, by the way, had a padlock on it because they kept a padlock on it to ensure that we didn't sneak and get any food. And I opened up the drawer of the knife that held the knives, and I grabbed the biggest one I could find, and I was determined that I was going to plunge it into my chest and kill myself. And then the only thing, honestly, that stopped me that night was thinking about that if I killed myself, that my sister would be all alone. So while my sister was laying in bed, she saved my life and didn't even know it.
Right.
And
right.
Sorry.
No, it's okay. First of all, it takes a lot of courage to come on the show and tell your story. It really, truly does. And so I just want to acknowledge that. I've been there. I told my story for the first time in 2019. And it takes a lot of courage, but you have a robust panel tonight. We also have listeners that are streaming in. We always have more than that are on the panel, just to let you know. So I'm telling you this not to make me more nervous, and it's very normal to be nervous. I think I'm shaking in my boots the first time. But I want to let you know, because your courage to come forward and talk about this, you're making a difference. You're inspiring others. You're giving others permission to tell their story. And we don't have, I've heard from a lot of our other guests and a lot of, the knowledge that I have through NASCA, it's harder for men at times to come forward and talk about this. So by you having that courage to come forward, you're encouraging not only other people but other men to have courage and come forward. So, I just want to acknowledge that. How would you feel about
it? I appreciate that.
No problem. It's true. And by the way, our refrigerator had a padlock as well. I totally get it.
Yeah, it's crazy. I couldn't imagine ever doing that to a child. I've got three kids, and I couldn't imagine ever keeping something like food from them.
Right.
But, yeah.
And if we were hungry, we broke in, then the punishments really came. I agree with you. My kids, we don't have any padlocks on any food around here. I'm with you.
Whenever, there's times where once I had a child that I would not eat because I was so afraid I would take food from his mouth. And I think a lot of that stems from the fact that, I knew I was neglected of that privilege, as she called it,
mm-hmm.
whenever I was young. It's just, it's crazy, but.
It is crazy, and being fed, eating food is not a privilege. It's a right. It's a right.
Exactly.
It's not a privilege.
Exactly.
So if you're okay, I'm going
to
break
the
panel.
But you was about me to ask something. So.
Yeah, I want to know if you're okay with breaking to the panel right now, and having the panel
fine.
Come on and just saying hello to you and introducing themselves, and there may be a question or two that come your way.
That's fine.
And I did want to let you know that it is okay if you don't feel comfortable asking a question to state that, and we'll move on. So don't feel that you need to, talk about anything or answer anything that you're not comfortable with. I just want to let you know that again, this is your story, and we're here to support you in that.
So before we do that, I will let you know that in 2019, I actually felt called to tell my story. So no matter what, I'm going to answer any question.
Okay. Thank you. All right. That's good for us to know. I'm going to bring on Bill Murray. Bill, I'm unmuting your microphone. And Bill is the founder and the president of the board of NASCA. Bill, thank you for calling in this evening.
Well, thank you very much, Penelope, for running the show tonight, and I really appreciate Timothy being here. You mentioned that we need to have more male voices speak out about the child abuse they experienced, which is absolutely true. You might find it interesting, those listeners that are out there, that, our founder, me, is a male, but we didn't make this a male enterprise. We cater to every person, every type of person, certainly every sex, you know, every sex or sexuality or sexual orientation, every religion, you know, everyone who's agnostic or atheist, you know, all races and types, upper class, middle class, lower class, in other words, everybody. The common denominator we have, Timothy, of course, is the fact that we experienced a childhood that no one should have experienced, and we're traumatized because of it. And I identify,
yes,
to some extent with what you're talking about. I will say that on top of what Penelope said, not only is it a right for children to be fed, you know, it's a responsibility for parents to do that. If you're going to bring a child into the world, there are certain things that are required of you as a parent, and nurturing, I'll call it that, is one of them. Now, there's physical nurturing, which involves food, and then there's emotional nurturing, which means like giving them a sense of themselves and self-esteem, and then there's the nurturing that comes through through love, through loving them, and there's all kinds of nurturing. So that's how I differentiate between the kind of childhood you and I might have had, and many of our listeners have had, with the other kind of childhood that most people do have it, frankly. But a giant percentage of us, maybe 30%, maybe more, 40%, are neglected in different ways, either sexually assaulted, violently abused, emotionally traumatized, or through neglect. And those the other kids that were lucky enough not to go through that, they're nourished. That's what they are. They're nurtured and nourished. And,
yes,
you know, we just didn't have that. So we have to, at some point in our life, hear the message that you're giving out tonight, that recovery is possible, and get on our own healing journey, because we can then start to kind of nourish ourselves with what's really needed in life and, you know, and begin to heal. So I'm very grateful that another male voice has joined us. Welcome to the NASCA family, of course, and
Thank you. You're
going to continue to tell us your story. We really appreciate it. So thank you, Penelope, for calling on me, and on with the show.
And I have to apologize to my co-host because I should have brought her on earlier. So Pamela Lockridge is so many hats at NASCA, and tonight she is on my host team. And so, Pamela, I apologize for not bringing you on earlier. It's been a day for me, so I do apologize.
No,
but here she is, Pamela, you're on.
I had some technical difficulties trying to get on, so I came on late anyway. So no worries. Timothy?
Yes.
I'm so happy you're here with us tonight.
It's an honor.
Thank you, sir. And I just wanted to tell you, your story's a lot like mine. Of course, I'm in my 60s, in my sixth decade, when I was growing up, between 4 and 18, I was sexually abused by my mother's second husband, my stepdad. And he used to I had two sisters, and they weren't sexually abused, but we were all mentally, physically, verbally, emotionally abused. And he used to stand us in the corner, okay, at night after we got home from school and ate dinner and everything. And he would go into his bedroom and fall asleep. And so, you know, we're young kids. We got to get up for school in the morning, right? So what happens to us eventually? We fall asleep. Well, he, at some time during the night, wakes up, finds us asleep, and guess what we get? We get a big, thick belt across our backs, buttocks, and legs, leaving bruises. So there was very rarely any time we went to school without the bruises. So I can sure identify with you. And I can remember going into the kitchen and climbing up into the cabinets and trying to be very quiet so I could go get food because I was hungry, you know. And it's just a shame what some monsters can do. But I wanted to ask you, where was your dad in all this?
He was always around, so I always said that my dad was a shell of a man. He didn't really do a lot of the abuse. Now, there were times where she would tell him to do stuff that he would, but it was normally just like with the belt. which was bad enough, but he didn't do a lot of the abuse, but he wasn't ever man enough to get us out of that situation, which was something that he regretted for many years.
So your mother was pretty much the one that wore the man pants in the family, right?
That is correct. Yeah, he was actually afraid of her. Like for the longest time, he would go to like Hardee's and get a coffee from Hardee's that had the little the little styrofoam cups, and that's what he would drink his coffees out of and everything, because he was afraid to have actual coffee cups because he had so many that was broken over his head. So he too abused by her.
Oh, domestic violence. So you saw domestic violence as well.
Yes, and I also got to see my dad threaten suicide on multiple occasions himself, which is very scary because we had a lot of our family members that had committed suicide. So,
well,
that in itself was traumatizing.
Absolutely. I just want you to know we felt your pain and that we are so glad that you have an avenue now to come to us. And, you know, if you want to call any of us on the contact list, myself, Carol Levine, she's a night owl. We're here for you. Bill's here for you. You don't need to feel like you're alone. We're a virtual family of survivors. And we're here for one another, because I heard somebody say recently, I think it was last week, and this really stuck with me, that she didn't start healing until she told her story to another survivor. I remember in my, you know, when I started trying to get on my healing path, I thought telling anybody would be, you know, healing, but it wasn't. Some people could not hear it. And I did not realize that for the longest. And I'd never found another person that had been abused. So until I told my story on NASCA, I really didn't have a voice, you know. I didn't know that I had I didn't know that I could have a voice, you know. And I just love NASCA. I love the family. And you're going to love it too. And we just welcome you.
I appreciate it. And in the same aspect, you know, anybody who needs someone, you know, I'll be here to talk to them as well. And my healing didn't start until I actually started writing my story. And of course, telling my story for the first time, and I actually told my story the first time at a youth rally, and found out that several of the youth in the audience had been through abuse and stuff, and that just meant so much to know that it made a difference in their life.
Okay, are your parents still alive?
They are.
Okay,
and I actually had a conversation with them before I published my book, and told them what, you know, I felt called to do. And I had sat down with them and actually told them that, you know, I want you to know that the stuff that we went through as a child. And I told them, I said, I want you to know first and foremost that I have forgiven every bit of it. And I told them that I love y'all, and I'm feeling called to tell the story, to help other people. And I asked for their blessing, and my dad was real quick to say, you're being called to do it. No ifs, ands, or buts, just do it. And after talking to my mom a little bit and everything, she also agreed. And they actually signed off for me to publish my book, and we had it notarized and everything. So I actually got their blessing to tell them the story.
Wow. That's amazing.
That was the hardest conversation ever.
Imagine, Timothy. I just want to tell you how humble you sound. You just sound like one of the most humble men that I've heard that has been abused. I can tell that you walk in forgiveness over this. I can just tell. And
well,
I just think it's
I know that, our audience comes from all lights, and there's different beliefs and everything. Of course, I'm very respectful of everybody's beliefs. But of course, my personal belief is that, you know, I do believe in God, and I believe in his forgiveness, that he's forgiven me, and he expects me to forgive, and he expects me to love as he loves me. So that's what I try to do, regardless of anything that anybody has ever done to me. And, you know, in the end, it's given me peace. And that's worth more than anything.
Awesome. Yeah. I think we're probably going to get more into depth with you about that. So I'm going to let you stop you here at this point in your story and let Penelope call on our other guests.
Thank you, Pamela. Yes, I'm going to bring on Annie. Annie, I believe Annie's from California. Annie, I have your mic unmuted. You are on with Timothy.
Hello, thank you. I wasn't expecting to be unmuted. Hello, Timothy.
Well,
thank you for sharing your story.
Hello, Annie. You're welcome.
Hi. And I totally agree with you about healing through writing. Writing my story really, really helped me heal. And then publishing it with my name on it so that the whole world knows, that really helped me heal too. What is the name of your book?
It's called The Invisible Child, Overcoming the Odds.
All right, I will get that. Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Oh, yeah, thank you,
thank
Annie.
You.
And I will put you back on mute. And, yeah, I can't wait to get to the last segment of the show and hear about your book and some of the work that you're doing now. But that's on our panel for the moment. And so, Timothy, I just wanted to bring it back because we ended the first segment with you telling us about your suicide attempt in the third grade that you then, thankfully – thought about your story alone as an only child and also to be, bearing the brunt on her own if you had taken your life of the abuse from your mother and you decided against it, which I'm very thankful that you were not successful in that. But I recently actually heard, too, someone say that every child's suicide is actually a homicide. Which I thought was very profound. But I'd like to move forward in your story. And sure, in reading your bio, it said that you began seeking a relationship with God after almost being successful in a suicide attempt, only coming back to life after hearing a voice say, "I'm not done with you yet," and I'm very curious to know about that story, if you don't mind sharing it.
Not at all. So I tried to actually commit suicide multiple times. One of the times that really stands out was in the sixth grade. I had a kid that had followed me into the bathroom after I'd broke out in tears from them picking on me and stuff, and the janitor had left some cleaning products there in the bathroom, and the kid ended up grabbing a hold of one of them, throwing it at me, telling me to drink it, saying to kill myself, I'd do the world a favor. And then after he left, I actually tried to drink the poison and ended up spitting it back out. Wasn't able to do it. Felt like I was worthless. I couldn't even succeed in that. And moving forward, on in my life, as I got older, at 14 years old, I started doing drugs. I had some quote-unquote friends that turned me on to drugs and was telling me all the good stuff it would do for me and all this stuff. So I started taking drugs and I started drinking real heavily. And I'd actually ended up one of my high school years, I'd ended up drinking over right at 2/5 of liquor in like 30 minutes time at school. Ended up, of course, with alcohol poisoning, having them send me to the hospital to get my stomach pumped. And it just continued. I just kept getting worse and worse with the drug and alcohol addictions. And when I got older, it was one of these things that I was using the drugs and the alcohol as a means of trying to kill myself without being able to back out. And there was one day that I was sitting in my apartment. This was actually after I'd already moved out from my parents' house, and I was a little bit older. And I was sitting in my apartment, and I remember, like, just I was all alone at that point. And I was sitting there looking at all the stuff I had. I had all kinds of pills. I had, of course, I had marijuana and stuff, but the pills and the alcohol was what I was focusing on. And I had decided that I was going to do as much as I possibly could so that I never had to wake up again. And I ended up crushing up a bunch of pills, had all kinds of lines, started snorting pills, and then I took the bottles of whiskey and I just started chasing it with as much as I could until I remember nothing else. I blacked out. And when I came to, I felt like I heard a voice say, "I'm not done with you yet." But when I woke up, there was nobody immediately around me. So in my mind, I was like, you know, I'd always heard about God, and I'd went to church because church was kind of a getaway, you know, in a sense when I was younger. So I would go to church every chance I got, but I never really believed. I always felt there's not a God. If there was such a such a being out there, such as God, He wouldn't allow me to be in a situation like this. You know, if He loved me so much, He wouldn't allow me to endure this pain, to endure this hell that I was enduring on a daily basis. So I didn't truly believe in God. But when I heard that voice say, "I'm not done with you yet," like it was almost like a questioning in a sense, like, was that God? You know, is there truth to this? So I said, "Okay, God, if this is you, then show me what you can do with my life. What can you do with somebody like me? Because I felt like I was worthless, like I wasn't able to do anything. So what in the world could, you know, this God have for me? What could He have in store?" Almost in a mocking sense, I said, "Okay, show me what you got." But even though I was kind of doing it in a mocking sense, it still triggered something within me. And I turned away from drugs and alcohol. I never went back to it. And not only that, I started studying the Bible because I felt like, okay, if I'm urging Him to give me a chance or to show me what He's got, then I'm at least going to study it a little bit, and I'm going to find out, you know, what this is all about. So I start studying the Bible, and as I'm doing this, you know, I'm starting to have that desire for a closer relationship with Him. And the more I read the Bible and the closer I feel like that relationship's getting, the more at peace I become. And, you know, of course, I ask God to, you know, forgive me of my sins, you know, show me what I need to do, you know, show me the way. And I started really wanting that relationship with Him. And as I did, like I said, I started feeling that peace a little bit. And it was one of these things that, you know, I had people telling me, you know, "Oh, you're stupid. Oh, you know, there's no such thing." Because I had a lot of friends that believed the same way I did. And they all kind of mocked me at that point. And they're like, "You're stupid. You know, there's nothing, there's no God," and blah, blah, blah. And as I progressed, it became one of these things that, of course, I felt that there was a God. I felt a presence. But at the same time, I always told them when they would sit here and mock me, I'd tell them, if I'm wrong, which I didn't believe I was, but if I was wrong, what was I losing? I was losing pain. I was losing hurt. I was losing things that I didn't want. I was gaining peace. I was actually gaining some joy in my life and what felt like a purpose in my life. So if I was wrong, then who cares? I'm better off either way. But, you know, part of me, you know, still struggled with things, of course. And I felt like, at first I felt like, okay, well, if I'm giving God control, blah, 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 then everything should be hunky-dory moving forwards. But, of course, that's not the case. I would sit around and wait on God to do something, yet I myself was doing nothing. Except, you know, like studying and reading the Bible and stuff. And I ended up finding myself without a home. I wasn't making enough money to cover the expenses I had incurred, because of course before I quit everything, I blew all my money on drugs and alcohol, and I was also, of course, I ended up selling stuff there for a while, which was making money. Of course, once I quit that stuff, I wasn't making that money, and I struggled to find work that was consistent enough, I guess. And it wasn't even that I couldn't find work. Honestly, it was that I didn't believe in myself enough to do these jobs that I thought that, you know, that I actually probably could have gotten. And I ended up working in fields, but a lot of times the consistency wasn't there. And I ended up, anyways, finding myself homeless and didn't have a place over my head. And, you know, I went back to just like when I was young and I was digging through trash to try to find something to eat. You know, I ended up back in that state of being again. I ended up having to dig through dumpsters trying to find food, trying to find something to keep me warm. I found an old train tunnel here locally and would go into it at night and curl up and try to stay warm. But even in that moment, I kept my Bible with me, and I kept studying. And I'm going to be perfectly honest, I'm not real good with memories, like remembering certain things. So I'm not real good with repeating a lot of different verses. But I just remember that there was one point I was reading in the Bible, and something kind of triggered that I felt like I needed to do more, and I wasn't doing it. And at that point, it kind of triggered, and there's something I say a lot now that, you know, we sit around waiting on God, but he may be sitting around waiting on us. We have to do the 90% that we can, and he'll do the 10% that we can't. And that kind of stemmed from that moment, because I felt like I can do more. I've just got to do it. And I started having a strong desire for a change. So that was kind of how that all worked. It's crazy to even sit here and think about, but, you know, once I started finally having that true desire for a change and wanting to make my life be something different, it just seemed like, I don't know, my eyes was open in a sense, if that makes sense. And I started not only studying the Bible, but also because I started having that ambition to make a change, I started studying other people who had, for one, I started off studying people who maybe had been through certain things and had overcome, which this organization here, I wish I'd been turned on to it back then, because I think it would have been a huge benefit and maybe got me on my track a lot quicker. But I started studying CEOs and people who've been successful. What are they doing? You know, is there anything that they're doing that I could possibly do to try to make a difference in my own life? Motivational speakers, I started really following a lot of them as much as I could. Just anything and everything I could to make a difference. And for one, I started going out and actually trying to hold down a job, which was a huge step. But a lot of it, during these times, you know, there was things that I knew that I struggled with. One of them was because I struggled with being negative. So not only did I research in the Bible, like, you know, just trying to find things that would lead me to be more positive, but I also started thinking about things that I could do. And, you know, I heard somebody say one time that you become a product of the top five people you're around. And if you're around negative people and that's what you're surrounded by, then you're going to be more negative. So I really started thinking about that, and I actually created a system almost that I myself was going to follow to try to help almost brainwash myself, not really brainwash, but retrain my brain to start being more positive and start believing in myself more. And just anything that I struggled with, I wanted to create some kind of system that would help me to overcome it.
That is incredible. Your story and your drive is incredible. You know, your will is amazing. It just reminds me of this quote that I saw, and I believe I saw it on the NASCA Facebook page, I think. But when it comes to, you know, trauma that's inflicted upon a person in their life, and a trauma is something that is out of your control, something that happens to you, with NASCA, it's obviously all the different forms of trauma and child abuse. But you can either get bitter or get better. It's entirely up to you.
Exactly.
And
I love that. Get bitter or get better. I love it.
I remember in my own therapy, the term was, I don't know if you've heard this term before, but constructive entitlement or destructive entitlement. Do you take, you know, your abuse and your pain and find meaning, like you said, and constructively, you know, find the path to taking what you've learned and helping others, right, your experience, or, you know, destructive path, you know. And for me, my father was on the destructive path. He was abused and he abused his family. So don't know if you ever heard the terms constructive entitlement or destructive entitlement, but as you're telling your story and the decisions that you made and what you did to advocate for yourself, you know, to move forward in a, you know, because God wasn't done with you yet. It's such a constructive path. And that is amazing. I find that you're very inspiring.
Well, I always talk about having massive ambition, that strong desire for success, you know, wanting that change. And I always say that, you know, your ambition has to be greater than your circumstance. Did I lose you? Am I still with you? Kind of got really quiet there. I don't know if I lost you or...
Pamela. Okay, she's back here now.
I apologize. I don't know what happened. My phone just dropped the call for no reason.
I thought it was you.
Never happened. Thank you for co-host Pamela. I apologize. I was so worried that everybody got cut off, so my apologies.
Oh, you're fine. No problem.
Yeah.
Keeping you all on your toes. Okay, Pamela, thank you. Go on.
But, you know, even after I got on once I got on my feet and stuff and I started making changes in my life and started getting better and stuff, I still struggled to not use. So I always say, you know, you have to have a victor mentality, not a victim mentality. And I struggled with that for the longest time because I still played victim, so to speak, and I allowed the things in my past to still control me. And it brings me to a moment that really made a huge difference. Is I don't know if y'all have ever heard of Grant Cardone. Now, I'm not a fan of his language that he uses sometimes, but I ended up being part of his ambassador program. And I was actually featured on a live call in front of thousands of people because of success that I'd had during the time that I'd been in his program. And I was talking to him, and he was, you know, asking me all these things, all these questions, and I would sit here and talk about, you know, a little bit about my successes. And then, like, any time that there was any kind of hurdle, I would make a comment something like, you know, I've still done really well, especially considering, and then I would bring up something from my past that was my excuse, so to speak, for why I didn't succeed in certain areas. And after a little bit, he stopped me mid-sentence, and he said, "Timothy, I'm going to tell you something right now that you're not going to like." And I don't remember if these were the exact words, but this is basically what he said. And he basically said, "You need to stop using your situation from your past as a crutch. It doesn't need to be an excuse. It needs to be your superpower." And honestly, it made me kind of mad when he said it in front of everybody. But the more I thought about it, the more I realized he was right. I was being held back because of my past, the things I went through in my past. I was allowing it to hold me back. And I decided in that moment, once I realized that there was truth in what he was saying, I decided that I was going to do everything in my power not to allow it to hold me back, not to use it as an excuse any longer. And I was at his growth conference. There was over 30,000 people in attendance, and Steve Harvey was on stage. And one of the things that I always worried about was what other people thought of me, about me. I was scared to be on camera. I was scared to talk to people because I was so afraid what somebody would think if I said too many times, or if I stumbled my words, or if I said something wrong, because I didn't feel like I was as smart as a lot of other people at this time. And I watched Steve Harvey on stage, and it seemed like every 5 seconds he was saying, And I was like, man, this man who is so well known, and he is, you know, a motivational speaker, and he runs television shows and everything else, and like, everybody just thinks so highly of this man, yet he is saying every 5 seconds. Why am I so worried about it? And I started really thinking about it, and I'm like, you know, none of these people care. And it was in that moment that I realized that, honestly, they didn't care because people are battling their own insecurities. They're not worried about whether or not you say too many times, or if you stumble your words a little bit. You just can't allow those things to stop you. And it was kind of an eye-opening experience for me. But anyways, I wanted to tell that. And, you know, another thing that I've noticed over the years is, yeah, I've been through abuse. I've been through neglect. I've been through battling major depression, suicide attempts, battling anxiety, battling self-doubts and fears and drug and alcohol addictions, being homeless. There's a lot of things that I've endured in my life. And for the longest time, I felt like I was broken and that I could never be anything. I could never be anyone. I was never going to be any use to this world, which is why I wanted to kill myself so much, one of the reasons. But as life progressed, I started realizing there's so many people that's been through so similar things, such as myself. And people that's been through things that I haven't been through, such as the sexual abuse. That was one thing I didn't go through. You know, I also went through controlling and abusive relationships in my life. People go through that all the time. And there's other things that maybe I can't even think of that people are enduring or they're battling. And a lot of times, the biggest hurdle that someone has to overcome is their own mindset. But in one way or another, I've come to realize that we are all broken. In some form or fashion, we are all broken. But just like a glow stick, I like to use a glow stick as an example here. Just like a glow stick, when we're broken, and when we embrace that brokenness, that's what allows our light to shine through. And it's such a beautiful thing, just like that glow stick when it's broken and the light starts shining. The things that we endure, although traumatizing and stuff, we have to find a way of not allowing that trauma to control the rest of our life. Because whether you believe in God, whether you believe in something else, whether you don't believe in anything at all, you're still worthy of a much better life than what we've endured. And
absolutely,
we just have to find that worth and believe in that worth and believe in ourselves. But go ahead. Sorry.
No. I think, Timothy, you're right. I mean, there's just, you know, in my own healing journey and a lot of the special guests have come on the show. I mean, there is, in the healing process, there is also a journey to self-love,
yes,
and self-acceptance. And I think as children, you know, we don't receive that at home. there is a message that somehow we take with us from very early on from our parents. Because our parents, whether we're adopted or whether they're our biological parents, these are the people that are bound to nurture us. Bill mentioned the nurturing part, and love us, protect us. And when we don't receive that, you know, the message that I've heard a lot of us receive is not worth it. So we have to teach ourselves how to love ourselves, how to accept ourselves, and we've never had that. It's like learning a foreign language by yourself. And you know, the way that you describe, you know, that process and how you address that process, we all have different ways that we've addressed that process through different modalities or different avenues. And but we do, and that's what I find so inspiring, just hearing your story, that what you did, you had this, to me, just had this not only physical hunger, but, you know, your physical hunger, you transform that into this emotional hunger that you found a way to fulfill. And you had a goal. You know, you got the message that God wasn't done with you yet, and you found a way to take your pain and transform yourself, and also how to learn to love yourself and accept yourself. So that journey is, it is a journey. And I like the way you described it. I just, a lot of gratitude for you for sharing that with all of us. I'd like to bring to the panel, if you're okay with that, before we talk about a little bit more about your book and what you're doing now. I know 90 minutes initially sounds like a long time, but we're almost
done. It goes by quick once you get talking.
That's right. Time flies. That's absolutely correct. So I'm going to welcome Bill back on. Bill, I've unmuted your mic. You're back on. Bill, you're back on with Timothy, if you'd like to make a couple remarks.
Oh, I didn't realize I was back on. I want to make a comment about the notion of using our story as a crutch, as an excuse to stay where we are. I really appreciate your saying that. I don't hear many people saying it, but I totally agree with it. There are a lot of us that do this, and sometimes we revert back to doing it even after a period of recovery. But, you know, some people say, as was pointed out earlier, that, you know, telling their story meant all the difference to them. And, of course, it does, because at least it starts to come out. But then if you hang on to your story as kind of defining who you are, you're not going to grow. And, in fact, you can become embittered. Now you're embittered, but you're open about it. You know, you're loud about it. You're talking about it. And unfortunately...
Correct.
You know, you can spread a lot of, a bad sense amongst other people who don't understand that the goal, Timothy, is to overcome that, not get rid of it, but to use it in a different way, as an influence on the fact that no matter how far down we've gone, we can get back up. And we can, you know, then succeed. We can go beyond it. We can, that's what recovery is to me. It's not the telling the story. It's the what are we going to do about the story that we're now talking about. And so I appreciate
it. It's your superpower.
It's superpower. It's what you have to offer someone else, is what I always say. It's my gift. It's what I have.
Right.
And I don't hang out in the gift, you know, saying poor me, poor me, poor me all the time. I now say, you know, I'm grateful, frankly, for, you know, what I've been taught with this story. And I hope that other people can hear in my tone and my voice and my testimony that no matter how far down they've gone, they can succeed beyond their wildest dreams, frankly. You know, if you think all you got to do is learn to tell your story, you're selling yourself short, because there's so much more beyond that. And you can as I said, use it as a kind of a crutch, an excuse to stay, you know, in a bad place. So I really appreciated that comment. That's the one I wanted to key on tonight. Thank you, Timothy.
You're very welcome. And to kind of play off of one thing you said there, you know, you can't you keep looking back into your past. You know, I always say, you know, you can't tend to drive into the future looking through the rearview mirror. And at the same time, we should never, we should not focus on our past. The only times we should be looking to our past is to see how far we've came.
Okay, that's good. Yep.
Absolutely, moving forward. Thanks, Bill.
You bet.
And moving forward in the panel, I'm going to invite Pamela back into the conversation. Pamela.
Hello. Hi.
Hello.
Hi,
Pamela.
Timothy. Hi.
Yes.
Tim, you said that you heard a voice. I'm not done with you yet. And you figured it was God, and you were both trying to seek out, you know, who that was, and when you went into the Bible to find out if it was God, did you find out after looking in the Bible who it was?
Well, like I said, I'm a firm believer that it was God, and like I said, if you know, if I was wrong, I lost nothing, but I gained so much. And I know I wasn't wrong. I know it's God. And I know that I was very blessed to have heard his voice, and it's because I've been so open since, it's not the last time I've heard it.
Have you gone to any fellowships that believe in God to help you with your walk with God?
Has it just
stayed between you and God?
There's a lot that does stay between me and God, of course. You know, I have a lot of personal relationship there. But at the same time, I've, of course, through different churches and stuff, I've kind of been able to help build that and also to speak to others. And then, of course, I also took part in what's called the Walk to Emmaus, which is I went on that up in the mountain. No cell phones, no electronics, no nothing like that. It was just all about personal development with that relationship with God and just getting closer and seeing that agape love from God as well as everyone else that helped volunteer within the within that walk. And it was just an absolutely amazing experience.
Where did you do that at? What was it, a national thing, or was it a state thing?
I'm pretty sure the Walk to Emmaus is all over in like several different areas. I did it locally in my state. It was up on a mountain that's about 45 minutes away.
Wow.
45 minutes.
Sounds like
that was
trip
an amazing experience.
Like Jesus walked to Jerusalem.
Yes.
Yeah. So one last question. Have you ever had any therapy or professional therapy or not? Because a lot of the audience, you know, it's either they have or they haven't, and both ways are just as good as the other. You know, I have a therapist now, which I'm 63, and I didn't start with a therapist till I was in my 50s when all my repressed memories started coming back. But have you ever found a good therapist, or you didn't need one?
I did not find a therapist because for the longest time I wasn't seeking help. I was seeking to die. And then the event that caused me to no longer want to die, that building that relationship with God was my therapy.
That's good. Yeah.
It's just gotten stronger.
Right. I was an advocate for, you know, everybody should get a therapist, and now I've kind of changed my mind on that because, you know, I found out from some people that, you know, when they, you know, there's many ways to get healing, not just through a therapist, you know.
Oh, yeah. And I believe that everybody is different in that aspect. I believe that, you know, some therapists could really help some people. But at the same time, there are some therapists that don't truly understand what someone's going through in a sense. You know, they may have this degree, but they don't truly understand because they themselves have not been through it. A lot of times I believe that the greatest therapy, and I'm staying away from of course my belief with God right now, because I know like that there's all walks of light here. My advice for anybody is to get in a community of individuals that truly understand, that can help each other, kind of like what this organization here that's coming together, being there as a support system, giving hope. That is more therapy, in my opinion, than any specific person that holds a degree can do for anybody, I believe. That's just my personal opinion, though.
Well, I think that's spot on. If a therapist doesn't have any training in trauma, they can't help people of abuse like that, because they don't know.
Sometimes they can do more damage.
Exactly. You have to absolutely know you're with the right person.
Correct.
That's all. Telling your story, great. It's really been really insightful, and you've said a lot of good things that are great nuggets to take.
I appreciate that. Once I got talking and got over my initial uncomfortableness.
Oh, and we've all been there. And I was once counseled that the hardest public speaking engagement that one ever has is when you only are invited to speak for a minute to a minute and a half, because that's when you're still nervous. But the longer, right, the longer you speak, you settle in. So I think some of the hardest talks are the shorter ones. So, doing it.
Well, I was talking to my daughter recently about fears and how you have conscious and unconscious fears, and those unconscious ones, are things not like, you have your conscious ones, which are like fear of heights, things like that, and then you have your unconscious ones. And she's like, well, what's that? I was like, well, like the fear of being on video or the fear of public speaking. She's like, well, what's yours? I said, well, those are my two biggest ones right there, fear of public speaking and fear of being in front of a video camera. And she was confused because she said, wait a second, how is that your two biggest unconscious fears whenever that's stuff that you do on a daily basis? Because I'm always talking to people, I'm always speaking, or I'm always in front of a video camera. And I said, just because it's my biggest fears doesn't mean that it's going to stop me. Fear is not going to be my decision maker, and if it's something that makes me uncomfortable, that means I need to do it.
Yeah, it's right. Absolutely, absolutely. Well, there's all different types of fear, isn't there? Like, there's all different types of shame.
Oh, yes.
I mean, growing up as a child in an abusive home and being fearful, in fear all the time, is a very toxic type of fear. But
Correct. Getting
out of your comfort zone, like public speaking or being on camera, that's growth. That's right, getting over a fear and
Correct. Growing. Exactly. You have to get comfortable being uncomfortable.
Exactly. Well, I would like to know and ask you a question as to how you found NASCA.
By research.
Mm-hmm.
As I continue, and of course I am telling my story and I am speaking and stuff, I just wanted to find an avenue to be able to not only help people as I already doing, but I wanted to find an avenue also to be able to have an opportunity to give back and help out even more, and not one that I was, nothing about money. I just want to be able to find as many opportunities as possible to be able to make a difference. One of my visions is to be able to positively impact as many people as I can before I do expire. And one way is I wanted to do research and find organizations such as this that I could be a part of and try to help out people as much as possible. Because I've been through a lot, but I've also overcame a lot. And I know I'm in a better place now, and I need to be able to use the things that I've endured and my journey to be able to help other people to also find their own journey and to be, help them to also be able to overcome the hurdles in their life that they're still enduring and battling.
Well, I'm happy that you found NASCA in that search, and I'm happy too that you are now part of the NASCA family. So, as you know, so we are one, you know, big family of individuals. We've all walked in very similar shoes. So I'm sure you've been welcome to the family, but if you haven't, welcome to the NASCA family. And before we continue, I always like to say the best for last, but I always love the third segment of the show because we talk about more about some of the great work that you're doing now in your book and how to connect with you, if that's a possibility. But I did want to mention NASCA's website, which is www.nasca, which is NASCA.org. And on the, you'll find that NASCA just has a plethora, as we said, of resources of support for recovery for anyone who wishes to know more, anybody, any adult suffering from any of the effects of childhood abuse, anybody interested in learning more about childhood trauma prevention, intervention, recovery. The show schedule is on the front page, as is NASCA also offers 3 group recovery meetings a week, Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday, 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And there's many, many more resources. So if you haven't had an opportunity, anybody on the panel or listening in, to go visit the NASCA website, please feel free to do so. And NASCA is a nonprofit 501c3 organization. We are fully funded and supported by our members. So you'll also find more information about that on the NASCA website. So, Timothy, though, I wanted to just continue on. And in the last segment, I wanted to hear a little bit more about your path moving forward. So in 2019, after feeling called to tell your story, you wrote your book, The Invisible Child, Overcoming the Odds. It was, and as you mentioned, you've forgiven your parents. You've built a relationship with them, and you received their blessing in your journey to help others. So I'd just like to hear a little bit more about the work that you're doing. I know you're the founder of Phelps Can Help. I'm just going to turn it back over to you, and I'm excited to hear about all of these wonderful things.
Excellent. Okay, so real quick, I just want to read just one part out of my book here. It's called The Invisible Child Poem, and this is kind of how it started in a sense. I started writing this when I was still hurting, and I wrote little by little, but then towards the end, it was more so that I was no longer really hurting because I'd already started writing the book and stuff as well, and I was finishing up the poem as I went, and I ended up adding the poem in here. And I would like to read it first, and then I'll tell a little bit about what I'm doing now. It's called The Invisible Child. The invisible child, no one truly knew the pain he endured and all he went through. You're worthless and stupid. You'll never be loved. You're ugly, a mistake, she continued to judge. I hate you. You should have never been born. I wish you'd die. You're nothing but a thorn. He acted as though all was fine, although he can't deny that the verbal and mental abuse made him want to die. How could someone treat a child this way? There's no excuse for the awful things she would say. The invisible child, no one truly knew the pain he endured and all he went through. He'd stand in a corner with his arms held high. He'd be beat if they lowered, not understanding why. Slammed into the wall after being hit in the head, she wouldn't stop no matter how much he pled. Although he wanted to stand and fight, the physical abuse made him want to end his life. How could someone beat a child black and blue? There's no excuse for the things she would do. The invisible child, no one truly knew the pain he endured and all he went through. Water, a slice of bread was often all he'd get to eat, with an occasional rotten potato given as a treat. He'd be starving, yet they'd eat in front of him. He'd often feel as though he was living in a horror film. He'd go to bed at night hungry and sore. Neglect left him wanting to live no more. How could someone eat in front of a starving child, watching him drool? There's no excuse for someone being so cruel.
the invisible child, no one truly knew the pain he endured and all he went through. Was he a bad kid? Did he do something wrong? Surely he'd die soon. It wouldn't be long. The kid grew up and he turned to drugs and alcohol, trying to mask the pain, but at night he'd still bawl. Ultimately, he tried to kill himself and came very close when he drank way too much and also overdosed. How could someone care so little for a gift sent from God that they'd leave him to be a statistic, broken and flawed? The invisible child, no one truly knew the pain he endured and all he went through. God had a plan for this child, and he wrapped him in his arms, promising him no one would bring him any more harm, delivering him from evil and setting him free, opening his eyes so he can finally see, showing him the beauty that is God's art, sending him a family to complete his heart. How could someone do to a child all they had done? It no longer matters because he's God's son, the invisible child. It's time they finally knew the pain he endured and all he went through. Now he's a changed man and he lives his life in a different way, showcasing God's art through photography and helping people through coaching and real estate. It's time to get comfortable being uncomfortable, to see life clearer. You can't drive into the future looking through the rearview mirror. He went through abuse, neglect, alcohol, and dope. He's living proof that no matter what, there is hope. They only win if you let them. So whatever you do, stay strong. You're special. You're loved. God has a plan for you, and they were wrong. The invisible child, it's time they finally knew the pain he endured, all he made it through. So that was the poem that kind of started the book process. And that, and I included it in there, and that's in my book, The Invisible Child Overcoming the Odds. Now, real quick, I just want to say, like I already mentioned, one of my biggest fears is speaking in public. As a matter of fact, for the longest time, I couldn't speak one-on-one with somebody and look them directly in the eyes because of my own self-doubt, my own insecurity that stemmed a lot from the trauma that I endured growing up. But I was sitting in church one day, and I just felt like I was, like God was speaking to me again, and I felt like he was calling me to tell my story. Now, I never wanted to tell my story. First and foremost, it was way too painful for me to talk about there for the longest time. Not only that, I knew I feared getting in front of people and talking. Every time I did, I felt like I was going to throw up. I didn't want to tell my story not only because of those reasons, but also because of the fact that my parents are still alive, and I didn't want people to look down upon them. Because it doesn't matter what happened in the past when it comes to my story. Because, for one, first and foremost, they are changed. They're totally different people. I don't want anybody to judge them because, I it's not our place to judge anybody. And although they made mistakes, we're all human, we all make mistakes. Unfortunately, their mistakes was huge, but we all make mistakes. They have came a long ways. They're totally different people, and I never want anybody to ever look down upon them because of this, because of what they did in their past. But I felt called to tell my story, and I prayed to God, if this is really what you want me to do, then send me a sign. One of the people that I follow is Coach Michael Burt. I really liked him because, for one, he really resonates with people. He's a little bit more personal, and at the same time, he doesn't cuss a lot. And a lot of speakers and a lot of coaches, they tend to curse a lot, and I like that he didn't. But anyways, right after I prayed that, 2 days after, one of his people contacted me. I had reached out to them because I'd found an error on their website. He contacted me back and thanked me for helping them out, catching that and stuff. And he got talking to me a little bit, and he says, I just want to tell you, we've got this event coming up, and I think you should come to it. And I said, well, what is it? He said, it's called the Million Dollar Coaching Program. I was like, well, what's that? He said, it's the program that we're going to help people to put together their story, to be able to figure out a way of them telling their story, and that way they can help people in the future. And I'm like, okay, there's my sign. So I committed, and I said, okay, let's do it. So I went there. I went through this program. I come back. I'm still not wanting to do this because of the fact that it still scares me to death. So, again, I prayed to God, and I said, God, give me a sign. give me another sign. I don't want that to be a flake. You know, that could just be coincidence. Give me another sign. The next Sunday I went and I was talking to my pastor, and I told him, told him exactly what was going on and what I was feeling. He said, if you're feeling called to do it, you need to do it. No questions asked. And I said, well, you know, I understand that. I don't want to end up in the belly of a whale like Jonah did in the Bible. I said, but I just want to make sure because I really don't want to do it. He says, well, most time when you're called to do something, it's going to be something you don't want to do, but you need to do it anyway. I said, well, I understand that. I said, I prayed for another sign. And I said, you know, if I get it, no questions asked, I'm just going to go with it. Literally probably 5 minutes later, maybe 10, the lady who runs the youth program comes in to talk to him. And as she was leaving, after finishing the conversation, she turns around and she says, Timothy. And I said, yes. She's like, I have this feeling that I need to ask you something. I said, what's that? She says, we're having a youth rally on the 13th of December. She was like, I feel like I need to ask you to come and speak at it. She says, if you need to think about it, that's fine. Just let me know. And I said, no, I don't need to think about it. I looked at him. He looked at me. He says, there's your sign. What were you just saying? And I committed. And I said, oh, let's do it. I went to that youth rally for the first time, got up in front of a crowd of people and told my story. First and foremost, right before I'd done it, every bit of my notes got deleted. So I was going in it without any notes, which scared me even more. But I got up there and I told my story. Found out later that there were several young people, young youth, that had been through similar situations. And several of them ended up giving their life to the Lord that night, which was the greatest feeling ever to know that I helped in that. And then after everything was over, I come to find out not only that, but in the back row was one of the mothers that had abused one of the kids that was there that night and that she had gotten saved. I know deep in my heart exactly which woman this was, because when I first started speaking, she looked at me with disgust, and I seen a look in her eyes as I'd seen once in my mom. By the end of the night, she was in tears. I don't know this to be a fact, but I like to think that it made a difference in her life too, and maybe it made a change in her life.
I don't think there's any doubt.
But my book was published, The Invisible Child Overcoming the Odds. I've had people reach out to me that have read it. When it was first published, before all this corona stuff happened, it was outperforming 99.75% of all books on Amazon. I had so many people that reached out to me just telling me the impact it made in their life. And to me, that meant more than anything. But the greatest part about writing the book, like I said, I talked to my parents, had the conversation with them, got their blessing. But the best part of me writing this book, and when this situation occurred, to me, it didn't matter what happened moving forwards. I knew it was all worth it. Me and my father sat outside his house for 45 minutes after I dropped them back off at their house, and we talked about God. This was the first conversation I ever had with my father that he didn't change the subject or start griping about, you know, that he, you know, basically his disbelief almost. This was the first conversation that we truly had. I was able to talk about God together. So that in itself was worth everything. Moving on, I started trying to find as many ways as I could to tell my story as I felt called to do. So I started doing a lot on social media, telling my story on there. And mid-year last year, I started up my company called Phelps Can Help LLC. And with this company, basically, I use my story to help other people that's been through similar things or that are battling different things. You know, I always say that one of the biggest hurdles that we have to overcome in life is our own mindset. But I believe that everyone has hurdles they must overcome in life. I believe everyone needs someone in their corner, and I know that with God and massive ambition, anyone can overcome the odds. So this company basically is I help coach people and help them to overcome different mindsets, different things that they're battling within their own mindset, and help shatter the beliefs that they've been brainwashed over the years. Whether it be someone who's dealing with being, negative attitudes, whether it be someone who's dealing with self-doubts, whether it be someone who's dealing with fears or whatever the case may be. I work to help people to overcome and to discover these mental blocks that are keeping them from success and help shatter those. So that's basically what I do with my coaching. And a lot of my coaching up to this point has been just stuff online on social media, things like that. I'm actually right now about ready to start a private coaching group in which I will be with them doing live calls every week, hosting monthly events that everyone who's in the coaching program will be able to come to live, or they can view live stream across the internet. And they're also going to have access to a program, an online university for all my future courses. Anyone who's in the program will have access to all my courses that I create, as well as they will have access to Tim Grover's The Relentless System, because I have a partnership with him right now, to where everybody who's part of my coaching program will also get his system for free within my system. And one of the courses that I'm finishing up, and they'll actually be live here in a couple of days, is actually called The Magic Mirror, The Power of a Positive Mindset, which is also the title of the second book that I'm writing currently. And it's basically a program that I created when I was younger that helped me to overcome my own negativity. And now I'm putting it into a course to help other people as well.
Amazing work. Amazing, amazing story. Amazing work. Amazing path. And you've taken us down that path and on your journey with you tonight. And I'm so appreciative. We're down to 2 minutes and 30 seconds. And I would like, if you don't mind, again, to let our panel members and also those who are listening in know, again, how to get a hold of you or how to access your book or your website, your coaching. It's called, let's see here,
yes.
Selves Can Help LLC. So maybe you can give us some of your contact info, a way to look you up.
Yes. If you go to coachphelpscanhelp.com, that will give you access to everything about me. I mean, it'll tell my business address, it'll tell my phone number, it'll tell my email address. There's also an opportunity on there that if you go to that website and click free ebook, I actually created this page specifically for this call. And it will actually, if you enter your information in there and submit it, I will send everybody who is interested in a copy of my book, I'll send them a free ebook free of charge. And then, of course, if anybody's interested in getting started in my coaching program, there's also a link that says coaching, and it takes you to the sign up page for my coaching program that it tells you exactly what all you'll get. And there's a coupon code that I created, all capital letters, NAASCA, all capital letters, that they can get 20% off for the life of them being in the program as well. So if anybody's interested in getting started in being part of the Founders Club for my coaching program, that's an opportunity for them to do that as well. But most definitely go in there and get the free copy of of the ebook I wrote, The Invisible Child Overcoming the Odds.
Well, thank you, Timothy. Thank you so much. Thank you for coming on the show tonight and sharing your story and your journey with us. Truly inspiring.
It was an honor.
Very inspiring story. It was an honor to have you on the show. And on behalf of NASCA, my co-host Pamela, and all the panel members, and by the way, we had more panel members join us in the end, but just not enough time. We're down to 2 seconds left. So I just wish to thank you very much for coming on. Thank you for those who called in. Thank you for those who are listening. And please, if you need somewhere to go, if you want to learn more about child abuse, trauma, prevention, intervention, recovery, please visit NASCA.org. Thank you and good night.
Tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was blue.
Talk Radio.